This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and not the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin, who's on holiday in Spain. We heard from Ruth Minhall in the first part of the show. We've got another great guest to talk to shortly in the second part of the show. But welcome back. I'm just catching up with me Twitter. IFF Kitchen have tweeted asking for a shout out, and they say, "We spied the boss." Did you? I'd hide if I were you. Chips and Dinks, another fabulous lineup. Oh, hold on, I nearly lost it. Chips and Dinks, is it? Another fabulous lineup, Business Bunker. You always come up with the goods and holding the fort this week too. Have a great show. So thank you for that. That's the lovely folks at Chips and Dinks. Do feel free. Zachary Smith has tweeted. I don't know Zachary. Obviously a new listener, and they're saying. Let's just see what they're saying. Some great tunes already this afternoon. Looking forward to some insightful discussions from your fabulous guests. No pressure there then, Ollie. Jules is taking up my Twitter line now. She's posting pictures of her carver now as well. She's doing it deliberately. She's doing it deliberately to annoy me. There we go. DG East Vehicle Supply Services. Hi, Paul, and your part-time assistant. How about a shout-out for a busy vehicle supplier being bled dry by parasitic regulators? I don't think he's happy, and I don't blame him. That will be the FCA that's annoying him, I would imagine. So thank you for that, Terry. Casey K9. Casey's a greyhound from Tenterton. Hi, Vanilla Web. How about a shout out to my Darcy from a prize winning greyhound? Yes, I saw that. Well done. Congratulations, Casey. What else have we got here? George Tavenport has asked for a shout out to Charlotte and San Miguel. That's a beer, isn't it? There you go. Okay. Jules. Right. Okay. There's a Google Digital Workshop, and it's happening on the 8th of July. When's that? It's Friday?
This week.
On 8th of July, Google are offering a free digital workshop in Maidstone. This will cover digital marketing, building a brand on YouTube, writing for social media, and an introduction to Google Analytics. And it's taking place from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Hazlitt Arts Centre in Earl Street. You can book your free place by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, and the details will be there. So that's a Google Digital Workshop.
Is it an official Google?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're normally run, they do them quite often, they're normally run by Digital Garage. I don't know if you've come across them. They're not necessarily Google employees,
right.
But they're working under Google brand around the country, delivering digital workshops.
Okay.
Yeah, and they run them quite often in different places. But this, I haven't seen one in Maidstone before. They normally run them in Canterbury and places like that. This 8th of July. When's 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, Thursday. Friday. That's right, it's Friday. Yeah, 10 o'clock Friday at the Hazlitt Arts Centre in Earl Street. Yeah, you want to go along to that, Ollie?
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
It's a free event. It's a free event. I'm going to read you. Firms involved in importing and exporting can attend a free event in Maidstone next week. Business advisors and accountants Crowe is hosting its second international trade discussion group event on Wednesday, July the 13th. Specialists from its tax team will join a guest speaker from the Department of International Trade in providing an update on the latest customs and tax issues at the firm's office in the High Street. Those invited to attend include business owners and finance directors of firms involved in trading internationally. The event starts at 9 a.m. and concludes at 11:45. And to register for more information, go to Crowe, Crowe, the number 1.co.uk. That's if you're importing or exporting. Right. I think we will now speak to our second guest of the day. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show, Ollie Andrews. I could pronounce your surname.
Yes, good surname.
It is, because we share a surname. We aren't related, as far as I know, but there you go. I can pronounce it. Ollie is from OA Design. Ollie, thanks for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. Why don't you kick off by telling us a little bit about Ollie, and then we'll go on to what it is you do, how you do it, and all the rest of that stuff.
I have, I've been in business, I don't know, getting on for a couple of years now.
Right.
But I did start just before COVID. So I was doing that part-time while I was at a job, basically.
And then, right, okay.
Within this last year is when I quit my previous job and then went out on my own.
So it's an interesting thing, you know, Ollie, to start a business in the worst possible circumstances.
Yeah. Well, it was bad time on my part, because I actually started it before all this come around, actually a few months before.
Yeah, exactly. But actually, it's not bad timing.
Well, yeah.
Actually, it's not. And I'll tell you why. Because in starting businesses in recessions, bank failures, and all the other things, it's really good, because if you can start a business and make it work, then you can do anything. Yeah. So it's normally a good sign that a business has legs. Yeah. If you start a business under difficult circumstances. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I interrupted you. So you've been doing this a couple of years.
Previous to that, I worked in print and, signage and things like that. So
right, okay.
A bit unrelated to what I'm doing at the moment. But
right.
Whilst I was working in those sort of businesses, I was doing a part-time graphic design degree. So, my ambition was always to follow that path and go down the graphic design route.
Right. Okay.
Just things changed, didn't they? And
yeah, it's interesting though, because you said there was no real overlap from what you were doing to what you wanted to do, but of course there is, because graphic design kind of fits in both, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because you've got the print side of it, the physical print side of it, but so much stuff is digital now as well. So
yeah, well, that's sort of how I found my. So I went from initially thinking I was gonna. I've always wanted to start a business from a very young age, but never really just gone out and done it. I always thought there was something stopping me from starting a business, like you need to know more or something like that. But there isn't. There is actually, that's just a mental barrier.
Yeah, nobody knows.
No.
Nobody's got a clue.
I sort of finished that degree whilst I was working, and then thought, right, I'm going to go out and get some graphic design work. And I was a bit naive at the start. I just sort of printed out all these leaflets, went around to all these different shops, chucked them on the side, and I thought, yeah, people are going to be calling me up in no time. Of course, that didn't happen. I didn't get a single call or anything like that, and just wasted a bit of paper, really.
Mm.
From there, I started obviously just exploring different avenues around the design route, and then went down into the web design side of things.
I think it's a really important point you make there, Ollie, a really important point for people that start businesses. For the vast majority of people that start a business, they start a business in a field that they know. Unsurprisingly, that they're expert in or that they've worked in for a long time. And most of them aren't salespeople. And the very first thing you walk smack into is the fact that your job as the owner of a business is predominantly sales. You've got to sell your business. But it's not like conventional sales. It's not like hiring a salesperson that goes out and makes sales calls. Most people are just passionate about what they do give it to people without realizing they're actually selling. Yeah
That's a good something that I didn't focus on, because at the moment I'm in the middle of a rebrand, but what I didn't focus on at the beginning was spending hours and hours on logos and branding and things like that, because I knew the only thing I needed was a sale. And I think people get it backwards quite often. You can spend people spend months, don't they, planning this stuff?
You're absolutely right. The amount of, I used to operate as an angel investor in startup businesses, and the amount of people that come to me with a logo, a business card, and all the rest of it, you go, well, yeah, but what do you do and how much do you charge? Well, I don't know yet. Yeah, but I've spent all my time designing this pretty logo and making a business card and calling myself chief executive. executive or whatever.
Yeah, the CEO.
And some other stuff. I do some work with Young Enterprise and stuff like that, which is really brilliant, and I thoroughly enjoy it. But you go into schools with slightly younger pupils, and you go, right, we're gonna start a business, and the first thing they all want to do is design a logo. They always want to design a logo, and then they come to a screaming halt once they've done that. Well, now what we're gonna do? Oh, I don't know. We've designed the logo.
Yeah, so it didn't. I didn't really spend too much time on that, and hence why the name doesn't quite match exactly what I do now, because I am, you know, focused more on SEO than I am anything else. But yeah, like I say, I went from graphic design, which led me down the path to web design, and then from web design, I just got a massive interest in SEO and pretty much been.
Can I ask you a question on your journey? Because I love what your honesty about what you're saying here, and about how you've kind of picked your way through this journey, because that's the reality of how an awful lot of, not people like her who's an overachiever and she knows what she's doing, but the rest of us, we kind of pick our way through this trying to figure out something to do, and we try things that maybe work or maybe don't work, or we try things that work and we just don't enjoy and we go, oh, we'll do something different. But can I ask you, with the web design staff, were you self-taught?
Self-taught.
Which is lovely, because in a lot of digital stuff, most people are self-taught. Nowadays, it is possible to get education, you know, but I'm so old. I was talking to my mum about this the other day. My mum's 93, and her memory's starting to go a little bit. And I was sat in her living room, and she said, "Don't you ever put that phone down. What did you do before phones?" I went, "We had computers before phones." And she went, "You've never had a computer." I've worked in computers for 50 years, Mum. What do you think I was doing when I was a teenager and I still lived here and I was going on a night shift? So a lot of people are self-taught with things like that, and I love that as well. But sorry, I kind of interrupted you, but I just wanted to raise that point, you know, in line with what Ruth was talking about earlier. Qualifications are really important, but there's also a lot of stuff that you just learn as you go along. And I think you're an example of that, you know, because you're self-taught with that, but you also did a degree in graphic design, which of course is a fundamental part of web development, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, the degree helped, I suppose, a bit, but it wasn't, nothing goes to plan, you know, the idea was, like, I'll go out and get a job in, like, graphic design and then get a bit of experience in that to then go and start a business, but at the end of the day, that's all just sort of putting off what I really wanted to do, which was start my own business.
Right.
It was delaying it, so, you're never going to know enough, like, you've just got to go out and do it, and, you know, Just getting that experience and just actually doing something is way more valuable than sitting there reading 100 books or listening to all these podcasts every week and things like that. So
yeah, was it "Screw It, Just Do It" was the famous thing that Branson came up with. I think as far as launching business is concerned, I think you're absolutely right. You know, it is a journey. Nothing in this life is static and nothing's predictable, and the rate of change, not just technological change but regulatory change, all kinds of things can come along and change, you know, move what you're doing. You can have a perfectly valid business one week and the next week you're in trouble. You know, my own business, Jobs in Kent, we have just had the most unbelievable year. In 22 years, I've never experienced anything like it. We're a job portal. We advertise jobs. Yeah, there are 1.3 million unfilled jobs in this country, and no one is applying for them. And I've never experienced that before. You just can't get anybody to work. No one wants to work. 600,000 people in the UK have left the job market over the last 18 months. And they're not claiming universal credit, so God knows what they're doing. But so all of a sudden, something like that can come along, and you go, wow, how do we cope? So anyway, coming back to what you're doing, you started off with web design services, but then you kind of looked at that and put that to one side?
Yeah, well, I was building websites for people and then realising that they wasn't really doing much with it.
Right.
You know, these were websites that were just sort of gathering dust, really.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to actually utilise a website for anything, you know, you're not going to drive traffic to it, then it's effectively a pretty useless website. So, yeah, the next, you know, that's how I sort of started getting into the avenue of SEO. You know, and just that's just one particular way of obviously getting traffic to a website. That's what interested me most because of all of the different sort of the ways it works, you know, the different bits and pieces that are involved. And yeah, that's just sort of now I don't do websites, it's more just the SEO side of things.
You're absolutely right. There's so many people have a website and it's just a brochure website, it's just a page or a page two that it says, you know, where. We sell coconuts and coconutsrus.co.uk and is our phone number, and it's static and they get no traffic to it. I guess we went through a period, and I think it's probably still a little bit relevant. And I want your opinion on this: is everybody that starts a business thinks they have to have a website? And maybe 10 years ago that was probably true. But I think if you're never going to use your website, you might just have a Facebook page or a LinkedIn profile or whatever, which is just as good, and you can point people at it just as much as you can point them at a website. So I get your point.
Yeah, I'd say that's, you know, similar to the creating a logo topic, isn't it, really? Like,
yeah.
You know, you can pay someone thousands of pounds to build a website. It might look, you know, like a work of art, but
yeah.
At the end of the day, if people don't visit it,
they'll never know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely right. And then you're the only one that ever looks at it, and you get bored with it after a while anyway because you've seen it every day, and it never changes. Okay, so let's move on. You know, in building websites, you obviously understood the need to promote them.
Yeah,
And therefore you've kind of taken up this mantle of SEO. So explain to us exactly what that is and why it's important.
So yeah, so obviously SEO is getting people to your website through naturally through Google search results or Bing and other search engines like that. You know, and every single day there's people searching for your exact services. You know, they might be typing in accountant in Kent or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, there's lots of software out there that give you estimates of how much search volume there is, and it's essentially like wasted traffic if it's not going to you. Like you're missing out on potential clients. So you know, it's one channel of traffic to get to your website, you know, out of many. You can be promoting yourself on social media and things like that, but they all work together essentially now, and yeah, it's so firstly you're getting people directly to your website if they're typing in what we call transactional keywords, so a keyword where someone is looking to buy there and then or at some point in the very near future. And also to raise brand awareness of your business and to position yourself as an authority within your niche. So you'd do that through creating blog content. So you might, let's say you're an accountant again, then you might be answering, I don't know, 10, 20 questions surrounding accountancy or the services that you're offering. So you're not only getting people to your site that are directly searching for your services, but you're also getting people to your site that are asking questions surrounding your services. And if there's a lot of touch points people need before they actually go ahead and buy from you. So if people are searching questions around your services and then they're seeing you coming up in the search results, and then they're also later on, you know, 6 months down the line, it could be they could then type in an actual transactional keyword. They're going to put two and two together. They might have seen, you know, and read articles that you've done previously, and it's just a way of, you know, converting people. And
okay, explain to us if you could, Ollie. You've mentioned a few times keywords.
Yeah.
And that's kind of obvious in itself, is that they're words related to your business. So if you're an accountant, you might say bookkeeping, accounting, VAT, anything to do with accounting would be a keyword, presumably. But how do you incorporate that in a website so that it generates you a better search engine optimization?
So the two main aspects of SEO, the first part is what we call on-page SEO. So it's going through your site and making sure that it's up to scratch. Really, it's sort of you're basically preparing your site for people to visit.
Right.
So the first thing that you'd want to focus on would be like the content. So is that content going to be what people want
right.
from that particular keyword. So if we were to, if again, we use the accountants in Kent example. Mm. If it was an accountant in Kent, when someone lands on that page, is that everything they want to see to then take the action? You know, so it's a transactional keyword. Is that page and all the content on there exactly what people would expect to see?
Mm.
And also the other things that you'd be looking at is, you know, the technical aspects of things. So there's nothing broken on your site or anything like that.
Sure.
It runs smoothly, speed of your site. So you want people just to come on your site, get exactly what they're looking for, and then you know, just leave with a good experience. Mm. So they're going to come back in the future, or they're going to take the action that you've tried that you want them to.
Mm. You're absolutely right. There's nothing worse than following a broken link and getting a 404.
Yeah.
Although I did see, I can't remember exactly what it was. I saw one the other day. That was hilarious. Someone had used 404 as a kind of a marketing tool, and they actually had a website that was 404 or something like that. I can't remember the exact details, but when you clicked on it, it said, "This is a 404, but don't despair because we're going to tell you stuff anyway."
So they built that page.
As a 404, yeah, but it actually had content on it. Okay, weird. Reverse marketing.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. So like I say, that's the first part of it, which, like I say, is everything on your site. And then the second part is what we call off-page SEO or off-site SEO. Mm. And that's everything on someone else's site. So you're basically building links from someone else's site and then pointing them back to your site.
Yeah.
And this is done every single month. So initially, the on-page SEO is done within the first 1, 2, or 3 months, obviously, depending on how much is involved. And then the off-page SEO is just done month after month after month until you're ranking for the keywords that you're trying to rank for.
Right.
So the idea with this is that you're going to other websites that are related to your website, so related to your niche. So let's say you're a landscape gardener, then you're going to go to landscaping bloggers or something like that, or home bloggers and things like that. You're trying to get a link on their website.
Right.
That would then link back to ideally the page that you're trying to rank, or related pages.
Hmm.
And every single link is like a vote of confidence for that page, right, or your website.
Yeah.
And that's then slowly, surely getting your website higher up the search results.
Hmm.
But this is where it gets quite complicated, because there's no link is created equal. Like, you can get bad links, you can get good links. You know, if you was to get a poor quality backlink, these are what they're called, backlinks.
Yeah.
Then that'll have no effect on your site. You're basically wasting your time.
What would constitute a poor quality one? Would it be something that's a bit dodgy, or?
Generally, you know, yeah, it's quite, a lot of them you'd know, like, just by following the link. But anyway, like, I would say a bad link would be irrelevant to your site. The right. site that you're getting the link from doesn't get any traffic.
Yeah.
So the keywords that it's being picked up for, so the site that you're getting the link from, the keywords that it's ranking for, if they're not relevant to anything to do with you, you know, it's not going to be relevant enough to your site. They can be part of link, like what we call, they could be part of link networks. So artificially sort of.
They're artificially trying to boost it. It's like back in the day, many years ago, a lot of people used to bury things like sex and dating and stuff in their website because they thought it, you know, it promoted traffic, and Google worked that out years ago. So presumably if you do that kind of thing, then the search engines kind of black mark you anyway.
So This is the thing with SEO. There's no like set rules. I mean, they've said that there are certain ranking factors, but there's so many sort of things that are up in the air about whether people believe they work or whether they don't work.
Mm.
So with links, I would say bad links now are just ignored.
Right.
You're unlikely. I mean, maybe once in a while Google might give you you know, a penalty for building links, but on the whole, I would say that most of them are just ignored, right, and they won't do anything to your website. You're just wasting your time and money.
Just wasting your time, yeah.
Because if they weren't, then anyone could do what we call a negative SEO campaign against one of your competitors. You could build thousands of links to a competitor, in the hopes to try and bring their website down.
Yeah.
So if those links were did have a negative effect, then everyone would be doing that
and
destroying their competitors. Yeah. So now Google, I think, just ignores them to obviously stop people from doing that sort of stuff.
Mm.
And that's in the territory of what we call black hat SEO. So I'm getting a little bit deep now, aren't I?
No, that's fine. It's fascinating because, you know, This is the issue with so much technology. It's also, you know, why you employ specialist people to do this, yeah, because, you know, your average plumber or hairdresser or florist isn't going to know the ins and outs of even the most, you know, high-level part of stuff without getting into the arcane levels of keywords, SEO, meta tags and all the rest of it. Which is why you want someone that does know it to do it for you, basically.
Yeah. And it's an industry that is constantly changing. You know, like every there's a Google update a number of times a year, so what we call a major core update.
Yeah.
And that normally shakes up the search results.
Yeah.
So you know, sometimes websites are hit by this, and they just, you know, for no apparent reason. You, I mean, there's always a reason, but on, like from the outside, just looking, you'd be like, why?
Yeah.
So. You know, there's always Google always putting out new updates and things like that, and you've got to stay on top of this stuff, really.
Yeah.
And as a business owner, if you was running a quite a hectic business, you're going to struggle to be able to, you know, devote enough time to be able to constantly keep up with this. And if your competitors are paying someone to work on this full time, you're not going to keep up with them.
Absolutely. One of the things that fascinates me as well is in designing what people do. You know, coming back to some of the earlier things you were saying as well about logo design and all the rest of it, but people don't always think through when they start a business. They don't always think through the name of the business, and more importantly, its persona. Yeah, so they come up with, you know, Dave's Donuts or something. They don't ever check that the URL is available. They don't ever check that any of the social media. Is available for that, and all of a sudden they've got a company called something that they can't use, and they have to invent some stupid thing full of hyphens to get Dave's Donuts on the web.
Yeah, don't use hyphens.
Yeah.
It's I mean, people obviously do, but but there was a back before Google was as advanced as it was now. People would use something called exact match domains, so you know, if you're trying to rank for a builder in Kent, then people would try and buy the domain name builders -in-Kent.
You could do that with a job site, couldn't you? You could call it Jobs in Kent.
You could do that,
yeah. Just signed up to you. Sorry, hold on, I'll turn you up. Sorry.
We've just signed up to your Jobs in Kent site today, actually.
Have you? Oh, well done.
For a month, yes.
Well done.
Fingers crossed. We need tutors.
It's really hard at the moment. When you struggle, call me, because we'll try and help as much as we can.
Thanks.
But you're absolutely right. You know, Jobs in Kent, we launched in 1999. So
that would work then.
back then, I mean, we were there before Google.
Yeah.
And Jobs in Kent was the only way I could think of having a search argument that was integral to what it said. Yeah. And to be honest, we've been number one on... Not so much on Google now, because there are paid ads above us, but we're certainly on the top of it, you know, in the top two or three. We're top of Yahoo, top of Bing, top of DuckDuckGo, and I've never done any SEO at all. It's just purely on that, you know, searchability of the name.
I would say, obviously, you've been going a long time, so there's a lot of branded searching going on there as well. But although... Google says the exact match domains don't work. Mm. You know, like it doesn't look at the keywords in the domain.
Yeah.
If someone was to search Jobs in Kent, and they saw Jobs in Kent on the search results, it's going to get a higher click through rate, and a click through rate is going to contribute to how high you are in the search results as well.
Yeah. It, you know, you're right, and Google do say that. It's just another. If you can try it yourself, because the job market is huge, and if I just put jobs, I'd come on page 9,942, because you've got all these other, like, Total Jobs, Indeed, and all these major corporations, most of them run by the Chinese government, I might add. So, you know, and you got paid ads and all the rest of it. So you've got to be specific, So Jobs in Kent is relevant to Kent, So I've never bothered about the overall stuff. It's my watch. I've just bought an iWatch, and every now and again I knock the thing, and Siri tries to interpret what I'm saying. You thought it was you, didn't you, Ruth? Yeah, no, it was me. But, you know, if you type jobs space in space Kent, then we'll come near the top. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you mentioned a minute ago about, you know, if you type in jobs, that has what we call a mixed intent. So search intent is a massive thing at the moment. You know, it's about understanding the meaning behind a keyword.
Yeah.
So jobs could mean that someone just wants like information on what a job is. You know,
Down
to a very basic level. Like the intent could be informational, it could be transactional. You know, it can be it's too broad. You'd never you would never even want to focus your time on a keyword like that, because it wouldn't make you it would just get you a lot of useless traffic, essentially.
And I think that's a really major point as well, is that when you're running a business, you've got to think about who your target market actually is, because so many people can go overboard with this and go, oh, you know, I'm going to promote this to everyone. But if you're running bookkeeping services in Folkestone, you might stretch, you know, to cover Kent at the most, but you're not likely to export that or, you know, go anywhere else. So basically, when you're looking at what you're doing here, is you only need to focus on that Kent bit of it, you know. So your keywords can include that, couldn't they? This is bookkeeping Folkestone. Yeah.
So generally, you'd only really want to target keywords that you know have search volume. So, for example, you know, like bookkeeping in Kent is going to be like a sort of broader area, so it's going to be a bit more competitive.
Yeah.
So some of these very small areas within Kent, you might not want to create separate pages for. You might want to target. You might just want to write that we cover these areas within the Kent page, because they're not going to be competitive enough to warrant a new page for it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of analysing what you need to do. So essentially, like Google's page one search results is almost like a guide as to what it's looking for.
Yeah.
Because Google all day long, like, you know, constantly is analysing all the data. So if someone types anything in, like jobs in Kent, it's constantly analysing the data, what people are clicking on, how long they're spending on sites, all that sort of stuff. And it's like, so if you're ignoring what's on page one and you're just going about doing your own thing, you know, just creating some random web page and just chucking a few keywords in there, you're not going to rank, because you need to understand what Google wants from that search.
Yeah.
And it tells you by looking at search at the search results.
Yeah. There's also, I can't remember what it was called, and I think they changed the name of it anyway. Google Zeitgeist is what it was originally called, but they changed the name of it. And basically, it was a free tool where you could see what was trending.
Google Trends.
Yeah. Originally, they called it Google Zeitgeist. I don't know why, but then they changed the name. Google Trends. So you can find the trends that are happening on Google, and then amend your keywords to suit those trends. Yeah.
Yeah, you can. That's a way of finding new keywords. So a lot of this. So Google's very like shady about the stuff it gives you. It doesn't really give you a lot of data.
Yeah.
I think Google search, Google Analytics used to give you keyword search volume, but it doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
But Google Search Console, that gives you all the keywords. So let me explain the differences actually before I go into this. So Google Search Console is like from the inside of your site outwards. So it will analyze all the data. So it'll tell you what keywords that your site's been picked up for. It will tell you how many impressions you're getting. So an impression is every time someone searches a keyword. If you're within that search results, that's one impression. And it tells you how many clicks and things like that and your average position. So Google Search Console is like the go-to for SEO, really, because it gives you all of this. It gives you the data you need. Whereas Google Analytics is more like understanding what people are doing on your site, what kind of paths they're taking, where they're dropping off, and all that sort of stuff.
I'm smiling at you. Ruth asked me earlier how many listeners we've got. One of the reasons I can't tell you is because of Google Analytics. Google Analytics has a problem. When you press on the Listen Live player, Google assumes you've left the site. So it doesn't record them as...
So you're getting all these drop-offs, essentially.
Yeah, we get millions of drop-offs because it says, oh, they've gone, and they weren't on long enough to bother to record. I don't use Google Analytics anymore because of that, because it was pointless.
But then that's another thing. So, you know, how quickly people drop off your site.
Yeah.
Again, like, that depends on the site that you're visiting. So if you've got an e-commerce site and someone clicks onto your site, then... like the ideal action is they browse your products for a little while, and then they go through to the, you know, they're going to transact. That's the ideal action.
Yeah.
So the time they spend on your site is going to be a lot longer than if they was just like looking for an emergency service. So let's say they needed an emergency plumber, they're going to click on your site, and then within about, you know, a couple of minutes, they just sort of browse the page and know that, you know, this is exactly what they need, and they're going to ring up, and then they're going to quit the browser. So these are all little things that, you know, you should take into account when you're building your page. So understand how long people need to stay on your site for. And if, you know, if people are just clicking on, let's say, you, like I say, an e-commerce site, if someone's just clicking on that page and clicking straight back off, that's telling Google that perhaps you haven't got the right products on there. You haven't got enough products.
Sure.
And they're not transacting, you know.
Yep.
And then obviously the same with, you know, a services page. It's probably quite a quick.
I just had a tweet. The reason I wasn't ignoring you, I just had a tweet from Paragon Drones, and they're saying, great points raised by Ollie. Sales are the lifeblood of every business, and SEO is key to directing potential buyers to your digital presence. Yeah, absolutely. So, where are we going from here, do you think, Ollie? You know, there's a lot of arcane stuff, and we need specialists like you to help us get through it. You've mentioned analytics as well. Whether you use, I use a thing called Stat Counter these days, which is a freebie, cheapy thing.
Right.
It does some basic stuff. Analytics in themselves is a big field as well, isn't it? Because there's a lot of things that you can find out.
That's going down the UX route then.
Yeah.
So you're like, you know, so you'd want someone that really understands behaviours of people. You know, you can use like heat maps and things like that.
Yeah, sure.
And that's going to sort of like conversion optimization. You know, what, like understanding why, what, how people are using your page, and how you need to sort of develop your page to make it better and to make people take the action that you need.
Yeah. It's scary and interesting all at the same time, isn't it? And it's like, you know, the kind of thing, you know, people still think it's some kind of magic when they click on something, go onto Facebook, and the very first thing they get from Facebook is an ad about the thing they clicked on 10 minutes ago. And they go, oh, it's magic. Oh, what a coincidence. And, not really.
I didn't realize, I thought it was magic. Really, I'm quite horrified.
I tell you, funnily enough, I spoke at a digital conference a couple of years ago, and there were some heavyweight digital people there, and they were trying to convince the audience to do what they were doing. I can't remember what it was called, re-advertising or something, where you
remarketing, sort of
thing. Remarketing, that was it. And they were trying to convince people to do remarketing, which is basically when you click on something, it then follows you around. Yeah. So wherever else you go after it, it keeps serving you the same ad. Yeah. And I said, do you know what? That's anti-marketing. I mean, really. And I said, I'll give you an example of something that actually physically happened to me. Yeah. I looked at a product on a Marks & Spencer's website, and I thought, I like that, and I bought it. And then for a week afterwards, I kept getting re-advertised, except the price kept going down, but I'd already bought it. So I just got really, really, really fed up with Marks & Spencer's, because they, I paid like 50 quid for it, and by the end of the week, it was 20 quid, you know, because they were trying to shift an end-of-line stock or something. And I said, so that's anti-marketing, I'm now really fed up with them, because they kept sending me the same thing after I've already bought it, Okay, anyway, thank you so much, Ollie, for explaining that to us and explaining it in an understandable way. That's the key thing, isn't it?
I mean, I do tend to go off on these little technical sort of talks.
But you can't, there's so many technical things you can't avoid. It's explaining to lay people such as me in the best way that you can, without, you know, making it sound too juvenile, you know, like it's magic.
It is.
Yeah.
I thought it was. Terrified now.
So Ollie, if people want to find out about the SEO services and the digital marketing services that you offer, what's the best way to do that?
Just visit my website. All of the details are on there, so it's oadesignservices.co.uk.
Fantastic. Ollie, thank you so much for that. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Do stay with us. We've only got a few minutes left of the show, but for the moment, Ollie Andrews, thank you.
Thanks.
The link for that and Ruth's website are both on the Kent Business Radio website, and they will be there forever. This is show number 586, which you can find in the show archive. So if you ever want to not bother to write it down but want to come back and look, that's where it is. We're still getting tweets. I've still got lots of news to share with you, and we haven't got very long. I want to tell you about this. Aside from the obvious COVID-19 pandemic implications, the construction industry is no stranger to crisis. Whether that be political issues like Brexit or a tragedy such as Grenfell, which ultimately changed the shape and focus of our efforts to drive the industry forwards. With constant growth in technology and evolving business standards, we can't just sit and wait for things to settle. Therefore, the Kent branch of Constructing Excellence continues to be collaboration focused. Through our wide and varied membership from all sectors of the industry, we're able to share knowledge and experience of the benefits of many. Our chairperson, Cheryl Corsbrook, hosts our events, supported by the rest of our cross-sector committee. Our July event has become our annual open event. It's not for club members only. Please feel free to join us and bring along your construction contacts and colleagues. We'll be providing refreshments, including a buffet-style lunch, and welcoming guest speakers, as well as hosting panel discussions. As always, our meetings are relaxed, encouraging open conversation and the building of relationships. So this is the Constructing Excellence Kent branch, and their open event is on the 13th of July. That's Wednesday, the 13th of July, and it's taking place at the University of Kent on the campus there, and it's from 7:30 a.m. till 1 p.m. And if you'd like to book your tickets, it's eventbrite.co.uk, Kent Constructing Excellence. So do check that out if you're in the construction business. A new Eagle Lab is coming to Sandwich's Discovery Park. To help further strengthen collaboration between the life sciences and technology sectors, backed by Barclays Bank, it's one of 30 labs around the UK designed to create spaces to help entrepreneurs and businesses work together to grow. The Barclays Eagle Labs network is now one of the UK's largest co-working and incubator communities for start-up and scale-up firms. Entrepreneurs using the space will be supported by a dedicated ecosystem manager who will provide the technical expertise, mentoring and connections required to integrate companies into Barclays UK-wide network. So that's an interesting development taking place at Discovery Park at Sandwich. Do check that out. They haven't given me a website or any contact details, so I can't help with that, I'm afraid. Maidstone Council have been on to me. Maidstone Borough Council has extended the deadline for bids from key infrastructure providers to bid for a total of £6.4 million worth of strategic community infrastructure levy, or CIL. And that's you can bid for that up until Friday the 15th of July. This is made up of £1.4 million of strategic community infrastructure levy funding, with an additional £5 million allocated from within Maidstone Borough Council's own capital programme, which can be used to top up the amount of the CIL monies available. The Maidstone Borough Council is asking for those who have an infrastructure project requiring additional funding to please take a look at the CIL bidding prospectus available on our website, which will provide more information on project eligibility and how to submit a bid. So you need to go to the Maidstone Borough Council website to look at that. Anyone who would like more information can email CILbids@maidstone.gov.uk. So, again, there's some funding available for strategic projects. This was bonkers. This was absolutely bonkers. But I'm really, really grateful to the guys that did this because they raised money for Kenwood Trust, of which I'm a trustee, and I'm also the chair of Kenwood Enterprises, the trading arm. And these bonkers people went and raised some money for us. And it was Born to Ride Charity Challenge has beaten the previous record for driving from Land's End to John O'Groats on a ride-on mower. They used an Isaki ride-on mower, which has a maximum top speed of 12 miles per hour, and they drove 880 miles for 20 hours a day. And Born to Garden founder Colin North, driving a ride-on mower, has beaten the previous record of 5 days, 8 hours from Land's End to John O'Groats. He did it at 12 miles an hour in 4 days, 6 hours and 9 minutes. Colin, you're bonkers, mate. The team included a support van and overnight driver, received amazing local and national support on the way, and a boost to the fundraising. Colin, who's the managing director of Born to Garden, says most drivers gave us the thumbs up and giving us friendly toots as they overtook us. During this grueling journey, Colin has stopped for refreshments and showers, battled heavy rain, wrapped in a duvet to handle sitting and driving in the cold during the night. The toughest part was probably the mosquitoes in Scotland. Waves of them hitting my face. He wrapped up and used goggles to protect himself. He said, we also experienced a loose wheel nut and a puncture on the way, but were able to sort these out on the roadside without too many delays. The exciting tough fundraiser has caught the interest and endorsement from local and national media, including BBC Radio 1 and 2. The teams have been putting out at the moment pictures and video to encourage support and donations. They raised money for Kenwood Trust, a drug and alcohol rehabilitation charity based in Yalding in Kent. They help people on their recovery journey and offer essential housing for the homeless. And their goal is to raise 30k. You can still donate by going to GoFundMe.com and search for Born to Ride, and Born is spelt B-O-U-R-N-E. That's just bonkers. How can you ride a sit or mower? I wonder if they cut the grass on the way up.
Might be done of hay fever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I used to cut the grass on one of those. I used to wheelie them as well.
Right. Hi, Paul. Each time you attend a meeting of the Marsh Network, you make a donation to charity. We support Calm, who support older people living in isolation on Romney Marsh. The Oliver Kerr Trust, who provide caravan holidays for bereaved families who have lost young children, and from money raised at our main events. We also make a donation to Child Aid Eastern Europe to support children in Ukraine and Moldova. Our first charity event of the year is the Marsh Network Charity Golf and Family Day on the 17th of July at Lyd Golf Club. For golfers, we will have 18 holes followed by a barbecue, and for their family and supporters, a barbecue-only ticket is available. We'll also have a short quiz before prize-giving for golf achievements. Stuart Weller will also be astounding us with his close-up magic. Tickets for the golf and barbecue are available to book by going to marshnetwork.co.uk. They say we're also looking for raffle prizes, so if you can give us something, however small or large, for the charity, please email terry@botfield.net, terry@botfield.net, or you can follow Terry on the Twitter, and I know his Twitter off by heart because it's one of my favourite Twitter handles, which is TDBotty. So do give him a follow on the Twitter. I've had a press release from HMRC, and they are reminding you that Making Tax Digital is coming into force. All VAT registered businesses which have not yet signed up for Making Tax Digital for VAT to take action now to avoid penalties. All VAT registered businesses, regardless of turnover, must now follow MTD rules. HMRC has published a guide on how to start the process and is running a series of webinars. If you want to find out all about it and find out about the webinars, if you go to www.gov.uk/guidance/ when to start making tax digital. Later on in the year is the Southeast Construction Expo, taking place at the K2 Event Centre at Crawley, and there's a call here for awards. You can get nominated for a Southeast Construction Award, sponsored by platinum sponsor All Health Matters. The categories for the awards are Women in Construction, Best Construction Project, Best Architectural Design, Construction Contractor, Best Supplier and Best Apprentice. Entering the awards is free, quick and simple, and is done by going to the website constructionexpoawards.co.uk. That's constructionexpoawards.co.uk. And the deadline, the closing deadline, is Friday the 2nd of September. Um, poor, conflicting, biased advice is costing people thousands of pounds, and even more thousands of pounds now, in unnecessary and oversized heating equipment that all also costs more to run. Spend your budget wisely on measures that actually save cash and carbon. We provide expert and impartial actions planned plans tailored to your boiler. Check out theheatinghub.co.uk. They came and checked mine out. I've got a brand new boiler, yeah, and they checked mine out and they saved me 10% of my heating costs just by changing the flow control on the boiler. And my house is still, well, not at the moment because it's summer, but, you know, in the winter, it was nice and warm. And they saved 10%, as I said, which is a brilliant result. But do you know what? We've reached the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsors, the lovely folks at Potter's Home Digital, to my two fantastic guests, Ruth Minhall of Tuitions Extra.
Thanks, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
No, thank you. Fantastic. And also thank you, Ollie. Ollie Andrews of OA Design. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Been enjoyable.
It's been fantastic. Thank you so much for being here with me and standing in, pair of you, for my absent co-host who has done a runner. She won't be back next week either. So I'm going to be on my own again next week. But we've got a fantastic lineup of guests again next week, which I'm sure are going to help me out. Thank you to everybody for listening in. Thank you for your tweets. Thank you for your emails and all the lovely things you send. If I haven't read your tweet, I'm really sorry, but we ran out of time. But we've still got loads of tweets there, but you can tweet again next week. We'll be back with another show next week. In the meantime, stay safe, everybody. Stay happy, and we'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.